welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artist First Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people are coming to the conclusion that perhaps celestial beings have been influencing this planet since history began. Perhaps our history is far, far older than we may have thought. And in my humble opinion, one person who knows more about that subject than just about anyone on this planet is our guest of honor every program, Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
I trust you're doing well.
I am doing fine.
Well, here we are, just a couple of weeks away from 2012. Oh, you thought I was going to say Christmas, listeners. No, something. Of course, Christmas is a very significant day, but the year 2012 is upon us, a mere, would it be 25, 24 some days away, depending where you are on the on the planet today. Michael, I've been reading, when I can find a few spare minutes, I've been reading that Colbrin Bible. Mm-hmm. I've gotten through, I think, the first two and a half of the 11 books, and I'll furnish a full report when I finish the whole thing. I've just gotten through the creation and through Anyway, I won't go into that at the moment, but looking forward to getting through that and reporting back on the fascinating information that's in there. Okay, having said that, what's on the agenda for today? Anything happened significant in the world in the past 7 days you'd like to talk about?
Well, no, actually, there's, kind of going along with the idea of a changing of times, of course, Vatican looking at other things than within this world, or looking out of this world, and in terms of celestial life, other than angels, I guess. And maybe try to put two and two together also. And they have insight. And I know that there have been some really interesting changes, as I remember the days and the earlier parts of my discussion of the events that happened with me. I mean, taking off this world into the New Jerusalem, which is, of course, a gigantic, very, very large architectural sphere, probably the largest of such a sphere within this our solar system, but definitely not the largest within, you know, in the universe, at least within the galaxy. And is something that in that discussion I saw certain changes, certain admissions come out, and I noticed that a lot of them was coming out of Italy when we did some research on who was looking into the site. And they're like, wow, all these countries in the world, and wow, all of a sudden Italy was in there, and a lot of hits was coming through from them, and they could have very well been listening very closely to the things that I was saying. And it's brought attention to them as to making certain adjustments in terms of their perhaps idea of the cosmos and the universe of location of where we live. And I'm wondering how much further they will go. And of course, if it's an outward discussion, there's a tremendous inward discussion that goes along there among the higher-ups within the Vatican and within also the many, many churches within Christendom that they perhaps are influencing. And that's some of the interesting things that I'm kind of watching. I say, wow, you know, there's a turning of an age. There's at least a turning of the very staunch at one time, very, very dark and mystifying, mystical, within, hidden within itself, internally, a kind of a attitude, perhaps more than an attitude, tremendous power at one time that the Vatican held, being a very, very different kind of a organization today than it was in the perhaps in the couple centuries ago. And this is something that's very interesting because there are many, many churches noticed are you know, making some adjustments. And I've been finding my discussions personally with those who know me very well, and my discussions as personally with these different leaders and local area leaders, whether it be Christian ministers or Buddhist monks or Buddhist theologians, or discussions, I found that perhaps Buddhists seem to be quite open, you know, whereas some of Christendom tends to hide within the, behind the, you might say, the skirts of the Bible and its doctrines. And they find that place very comfortable. Moving away from that, they feel very, very, very uncomfortable. Anyway, that's some of the discussions that you know, I was just kind of meditating on, because it's I'm watching that take place.
Well, didn't just today we hear some organization announce that they think they have identified another planet some, I don't know, 600 light years away that they believe has a very high probability that it's just in the right spot with just the right warmth and a very likely candidate for life?
Well, I'm sure that that's probably true. I don't know anything about that being announced, but if it was announced in such a way, I mean, that's definitely what we are gaining the ability to discover using viewpoints that are off this earth. And that's one of the tremendously important pieces of technology that's within our hands, is how we can gaze within our own point of discovery. And it's one of the celestials' points in which they feel that they are moving towards us as fast as we are moving towards them. And that is a point which makes the concept of 2012, as far as changing of us, of an age, very, very poignant, very right on the times, right in the times, in a celestial sense, because we are no longer domiciled on our planet, in our own discoveries. It's beginning to expand beyond that, and also beyond the dimensions of our own place and time. And on a side point, there's a little peek on some. I always kind of wonder what is looked at and by the celestials. And I did have almost the like a photograph, but it was a kind of like a moving scan of a building, kind of a pinkish hue, seemingly adobe type, but about four stories, and apparently there's some interest in it, and they may be somebody targeting it. Well, anyway, that's just a little thing that I would share. You know, if they send me something, I'll try to share it, see if anybody come up with anything.
I did find, and again, I'm hesitant to talk about this Colburn Bible until I have read more of it, but I did find it interesting in the first two books that there was a statement in there that has allegedly comes from First Source or the Creator that says, I created you, and it's not my job to come seek you out. It is your job as my creation to seek me out.
That's true.
Yeah. And I kind of thought, you know, boy, from the Judeo-Christian point of view, everything is, you know, a bumper sticker. My co-pilot is Jesus. I got the job promotion because God wanted me to. just kind of makes all that sound a little silly. You think God cares if your football team wins tomorrow? I never thought that was the case, but to see it in writing, it's like, hey, you guys got it completely upside down. You're supposed to seek me. But anyway, again, it's I hate to talk about things only knowing maybe the first 20% of the book so far, so I hate to draw the wrong conclusions that might change by the time I get to the end of the text. But in the current news, we're having some type of summit somewhere where they're talking about climate change again. And then some of the latest projections, worst-case scenarios, are that the oceans could rise several hundred feet. Not 5 feet or 6 feet, but several hundred feet. And I'm recalling, looking at the Google Earth maps of what the oceans look like without the water in them. And boy, what about all those discoveries in the Mediterranean of over 200 locations, some 300 feet below the water, where cities used to be? I think there's growing evidence that's pretty compelling that they didn't build these cities underwater, duh. At one point in time, the oceans were several hundred feet lower than they are today. What would cause the oceans to rise from that point till now? Any ideas, Michael?
Well, of course, we know that we had serious ice ages, the last one being not the heaviest or the largest, but we know that ice is no longer there. And, of course, they have drained the melt into the oceans, and that has caused the rise of approximately that depth, about 300 feet. Now, prior to that, there were other ice ages that have left their tracks within the sea itself, leaving different kinds of ledges or ancient coastlines. And that depth you mentioned, about 300 feet, throughout the world, you can find ancient coastline. This seemed to have been a stable period of in which the depth of the ocean, which it was perhaps shallower, but actually sea level was much lower by approximately 300 feet for a substantial period of time, which was able to etch quite deeply into the coastal formations that are now under the water. Besides the very interesting findings at that same depth of perhaps ancient harbors, there's some signs here, right here off the shore of Lahaina, Maui, that there seems to have been an ancient harbor. But we don't know for sure. Even with some of the newer technologies that went down, it sort of looks natural, but yet the shape seems to have that of a harbor. So I would say that, there was approximately that same period of time, over 10,000 years ago, that the seas were much, much lower than they are now. And that was at the beginning, about 10,000 years ago, the ice ages were just pretty much ending and melting. But they were stable for tens of thousands of years, I think. I'm just talking at, what I have off the top of my head. But I believe that that's pretty much a stable period, long enough to have these deep ancient coastlines eroded into what is presently now 300 feet down, observable. And also with that, it aligns closely with what has been written by the Celestials into the Urantia book. The Urantia book does mention about earlier civilizations, actually earlier in the functions, when the Celestials were actually fully functioning here, in terms of uplift on this planet. Of course, there was a problematically different goal. When you mentioned one in which was primary, which is sentience, humanity as being the sentience on this planet, is to seek out first source and center, seek out God, essentially discovering and learning and finding and putting it together, rather than the other way around. And in such a case, the whole the concept was turned utterly upside down when celestials themselves, who had fallen from that particular guide and essential prototype of goal and developing sentient and highly developed beings, from that point going, they would become, it was reversed. They wanted to get worship. this fallen group actually had a completely upside down agenda, where they said they were the gods, and it confused the whole development, of course. But then the Earth, of course, right now is very near a very, very great, more than a discovery, actually taking a higher step in not the evolutionary process, but the process of actually ascension. So the whole world will become a higher level citizen within the universe of worlds. You might say worlds, because many of those worlds are not planets. They're actually created structures, architectural spheres.
If you'd like to send a question or comment in to Michael, you can hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com. We've got a couple. We'll read those here in a few minutes. You know, it's got to make, as archaeology comes to grips with the fact that the world is older than 6,000 years, I guess most archaeologists would believe that by now. Some fundamentalists in certain religions may dispute that. But some of the carbon dating of some of the programs I've been watching put some of these cities at maybe perhaps 20,000, perhaps 30,000 years old. So that's I was watching a show about one underwater archaeological discovery off the coast of India, where they placed this city as being active from perhaps 25,000 to around 9,000. You know, that's a city that lasted 14,000 years. We have nothing to measure that by on our planet. You know, what's our oldest city now? 3,000 or 4,000, perhaps? I don't know. But, you know, we're talking on a scale that's rewriting everything here. Are we going to find the same arrogance in archaeology as we found in other sciences when new ideas come along?
Probably. It's very difficult to break the mold with these new theories. The idea is to go and prove it, and it becomes exceedingly difficult to prove such things. But we have ideas that humanity, human beings, have at least some technical ability, you know, was running around there, but not necessarily, you know, with you know, having great, wonderful cities. But that's something that is a part of our own discovery, I believe, that needs to be done. And it was that our planet actually was not the only one that was operational. In fact, I know that for a fact. I think Mars still remains somewhat operational in terms of some level of sentient being there, being living there, actually operating there, having been sequestered there somehow by those that I've been with, because of the serious concerns concerning you know, getting too closely involved with that planet. The New Jerusalem is much more fundamentally interested in the development of our planet, Urantia, rather than Mars. But yet Mars perhaps may have been a much more functional organization that had fallen and still remains as a fallen maybe city or world or something like that, where others may have come that were part of the older program, the one that is probably buried over those 30,000 years or so, and may have some evidences that are remaining there. So, of course, interestingly enough, some of the oral history, as well as some of the histories that have been recently brought forth, like from the Sumerians, the dictates, talk about such things.
Well, this is kind of off the subject question. Changing gears on you here a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the human hand or the alien hand, the gray hand. I'm talking about the structure of a hand, thumb and fingers.
Yes.
Of course, humans are mostly born with four fingers and a thumb, although occasionally, due to some, I don't know, things that happen to people during birth, some are born with maybe two thumbs or maybe six fingers or five fingers and a thumb instead of four fingers and a thumb. In my research years ago, I had seen where some folks thought that the control panels of certain alien craft were run by laying your hands on a control pad, except some of them had six fingers.
That's true.
And then we think back about the Greys, who might be manufactured help of the higher-ordered Celestials, and I've heard reports that perhaps they only have three fingers and a thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there a correlation, or is it just no correlation, between the number of fingers a species has and how technologically advanced, or does that give, is there some inherent advantage to having extra fingers? Does that somehow equate with intelligence?
Well, actually, I really don't know, because there was one case of a perfectly formed six-fingered man. His fingers were fully functional, all six fingers on each hand. He also had six fingers, six toes on each foot. And they were all perfect, operational. And it also required that for that to happen, you know, you had to have each muscular component, you know, so essentially the functions went back into the whole arm or leg in order that they functioned that way. That's just the way it seemed. That was quite an interesting individual. He could use his hands and everything in a normal way, and often would keep his hands in a way that people wouldn't notice the extra digits. Actually, it was fingers, not thumb. So, and with my experience in that point in which I was invited to, you know, go back to planet Earth, you know, we're at not Mars, because that was my request, you know, to make a diversion and on the way back to Earth, scoot back to Mars. But when I was invited, I commented to them. I remember I said he was just running the thing, his hands on the panel. He was one who appeared to be like a gray. I said, my hands aren't the same. And he said, don't, you know, when I laid my hand on the panel, I think the indent or the form where you put your hand wasn't an exact fit. In fact, it was smaller than my hand. So essentially, I could put my hand over the imprint, and it didn't, you know, it didn't fall into each position. Because I was thinking, the way I was thinking about it was that, when I put my hand on it, there was some kind of controls that I would manipulate, like, you know, some kind of buttons or pressure or push down on or something. And I would immediately notice that there would be some kind of change in the direction of the ship, but that's not how it worked at all. At that point, it became one of the most intuitive interfaces ever. Because to see the ship itself at that level of technology was almost as if it became part of me, where I had extended myself out into the ship through that interface. Now it was part of me and my desires. So all I had to do in that interface was desire the end goal, which was to get back to Earth. And when I had that desire, it moved there. It went that way. And I did fine, because that's all I had to do was to have a pure and honest spirit about it, you know, and honestly wanted to go there, go back to Earth, and it went. And that was very, very interesting, because at first it seemed like nothing happened. Like I might have was unsuccessful, but it turned out when the view went opaque, and then it became clear again. Before it became clear again, I thought we were in the same spot, and then I noticed, wow, we had gone all the way back to planet Earth, which was tremendously different in terms of how anything would operate in my mind. Of course, you know, I was driving by then. I was old enough to have been, you know, driving around a lot and, you know, racing little things, racing cars, racing motorcycles and things like that. So in my mind, it was such a different experience. It's so different. So if you look at fingers and digits being a key to intelligence, I don't think so. I think our intelligence can be multiplied by how if we can interface into the technology. And then from what I experienced, we can, because I could. And in so doing, it simply multiplies our abilities to do things. It just makes, it's like we are much greater than we really are. We just no longer have that technology ready for us. And it's one of the things that are being developed, ever more intuitive technologies that seem to interface much more freely with us. And of course, a technology, a civilization or someone developing a technology, developing something to interface into, to be very intuitive, easy to operate, would take it to a point where it becomes a part of the individual. Essentially, they have an extra ability simply because of that. So this extra ability in this case, where my hands went over the imprints of the control, was to extend myself and become a part, or the ship becoming a part of me and my desire. Kind of an interesting concept, but it really did work.
Aren't they working on similar types of things in our military?
Absolutely, but not nowhere near as probably as good as what that was, but tremendous anyway.
Well, but it certainly must be an advantage to any species to have, you know, hands that can manipulate better than others. You know, I think a species, perhaps, and this is just my opinion, but, you know, couldn't you advance faster if you had better, what am I trying to say, the skills that you can, they used to test for this stuff back when I went to school 100 years ago. They used to find out how good your aptitude was for doing things, manipulating things with your hands. But
one of the things I remember, you know, of course, even Riley talked about this great gigantic octopus, and I met him, and the idea was that he was very old for an octopus, and of course, sentient. The octopus we have here in Hawaii, they don't get much older than maybe a couple years old. And in tests that they've done with them, having only tentacles, they're quite able to do a lot with that, just tentacles, not fingers. So manipulating at a very, you know, our own children at like a one-year-old barely can do anything in terms of being intelligent and using their hands for stuff. Yet this octopus can be quite intelligent in terms of, you know, perhaps getting a crab out of a clear glass jar with a cover on, learning how to, you know, turn, open the cover and get what's inside. And these kinds of things are, if you multiply them out and you say, well, if they were able to live long enough, you'd be able to do a lot more than simply open a cover if the years go by. But for us, luckily, they don't live very long here. And that happens to be part of the design of our planet, because it wasn't fully a water-based planet, essentially, having only ocean, no land. So that sentient life would have to, would or could go in another direction, which of course led us to being, you know, upright and having arms and legs and forming the basic humanoid design that is prevalent in over 90% of the sentient life forms that I met.
You know, on that topic, getting back to the depth of the oceans, if you look at a map of the Earth and lower the depth of the ocean by 200 or 300 feet, as we suppose that it has risen, you expose a lot more land. And if you, in fact, there are some folks are speculating that perhaps from the Gulf of Mexico all the way over to Western Africa used to be above water all at once, in which case, you know, you'd add tens of millions of square miles of surface of land, which means, hey, did we have a more diverse biosystem back then? Because there was a lot more surface land for animals to habitate in, you know, and what happened to all of those, you know, in other words, are there entire continents in the Atlantic Ocean that have sunk? And what, you know, for heaven's sakes, what might have been on in the entire continent? Just picture all of North America underwater. Oh, that's right. That might happen with global warming. No, not really. But, you know, it just makes your mind race. And you know, what have we lost when we've lost entire continents now, perhaps, underwater?
Well, if, you know, just think how I just looked at the idea of the tsunami in Japan, how completely it wiped out some of these coastal towns or structures, to simply erase them. In most of the cases where there was basically no solid foundation, like concrete or something, there's no evidence that a house was there. And this happened just in the passing of a few hours. And in the case of known facts that our planet has gone through many magnetic excursions, as well as true polarity shifts in terms of north-south, as well as perhaps even rotational stoppages, our planet's rotation stopping, as well as changing directions, it would result in a tremendous amount of upheaval, and that would erase a lot of the evidence, not almost all of the evidence of the smaller civilization. And I had it pretty closely aligned from the celestials that their civilization that was in the past was much smaller, much less developed, but one in which was a lot further ahead than being a cave person.
Well, just imagine for a second, what if the proposition of those archaeologists is correct? What, you know, here we sit trying to figure out we look at the Incas, the Mayans, and we see that they used pyramidal shapes for their temples, and you look across to Egypt and you see, you know, pyramid structures, and you say, well, gee, these people, of course, from a time standpoint, they didn't know each other. From a historical standpoint, we say, well, how would that information have gotten from over here all the way, you know, tens of thousands of miles over there? Well, maybe they walked. If the ocean levels were not as high as they are now, and again, then okay, if you take this idea a little further, all right, so that's how these seemingly now unrelated civilizations were in contact with each other. They didn't have to become seafaring people. They didn't have to build great ships to go across the water. They just walked across the continent. Then, of course, tying into that argument is the accounts of, the Bible and many other ancient texts of the Great Flood. Well, man, if your whole continent went underwater, pretty big flood. The tale of Noah goes back 40,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 years. Anyway, I'm just throwing out food for thought.
Yeah, well, those are interesting concepts that have been worked out, and people have gone around the world to listen to or to dig up perhaps some of the older stories of different flood accounts and how they tie in together. And it's very interesting. Years and years ago, perhaps very close to the time when I returned, back in the early 70s, was my discovery of these perhaps events, especially the concept that are the changes that have gone into our planet were based on catastrophism, sudden changes and big ones, climatic changes, and as well as changes in our geography, the geology, just planetary change happened suddenly. And it wasn't well received by my discussion with various other people who were, educated in the basic concepts of slow change, long periods of time, or no sudden changes. Well, later it was found that that was wrong. There were many times in this planet, changes happen extremely fast, and having gigantic floods, of course, would change things pretty dramatically. And of course, we know now that there have been certain tremendous floods that have happened, but in different ways and different mechanisms. Breaking, emptying out a great lake, a tremendous lake, or something, and simply changing the whole position or appearance of some, perhaps the Mediterranean or some area close to it. And these kinds of things are coming to the forefront right now. But the most important thing that I believe the Celestials wanted me to understand was to have a change in mindset, because they told me they'd continue to educate me, to teach me, even if I wasn't at the New Jerusalem. And one of the changes in that I had to take up was one in which the world was not only changed slowly over long periods of time, but change happened very quickly and very rapidly.
Maybe some of the folks who are denying global warming should take heed to that. If I was a big corporation and I owned a bunch of beachfront properties around the world that were very valuable properties, how valuable are they going to be when they're 100 feet underwater?
Yeah, but there's also another point that is being made, that the seas are actually getting, the sea level is actually dropping.
Where's the water going?
Huh? The water.
Where's the water going if the sea levels are dropping?
Yeah, right? It's being deposited in different areas in the world, as they were in the past ice ages. And the ice was not all you know, evenly distributed in the north and to the south into those ice sheets. But there seem to have been areas in which seem to have had much heavier loads placed on the planet. And these loads of ice are happening right now, being deposited further inland than coast, and they seem to not be melting. And we being, noticing freezes. Well, New Mexico. Well, New Mexico always have snow. Seems to now, but so that interesting changes. So it's just regional, the deposits. So you can be losing some in some areas and be gaining ice deposits in others. So that's interesting. Also, the ice sheets in Antarctica. See, people think, wow, they're melting into the ocean, but actually they've just been in the ocean all this time. They're just breaking. And it's a very interesting mechanism that's happening, because not only we see the breakage of ice, but our planet is cracking up too with the amount of earthquakes it has. So ice breaking is no big deal when you think about the whole fact that our tectonic movement is speeding up. So there's cracking and things beyond ice sheets. But yeah, there's a whole idea that there is, rather than a sea level rise, there's a sea level fall. And I've kind of been watching it. You know, a couple of years, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, I was wondering how much the tides are going to, average out higher. And I've been noticing that they actually seem to be getting lower. The sea level seems to average out at the lower level now, a little bit lower than it used to be. And I haven't really, did an observation over a long period of time, so I can't say that that's scientifically proven. That's just my own guess, and observing, having a close observation year over year on a particular point where my boat is docked at, and I know, have seen the marks and the growth on the rocks as being markers of where the tides tended to go, and it seems to be going to a point where they seem to be more and more lower.
What about the fact that the ice that isn't in the water, you put ice cubes in your water, in your drink, it doesn't, when it melts, it doesn't necessarily cause your drink to overflow because the water's already been displaced. But what about like Antarctica that's got, several mile thick glaciers and all this stuff that's locked up on land, and as it melts, it must get lighter. And when you were talking about the earth crackling and popping, well, are we changing the distribution of the weight ratios by these, something the size of Rhode Island breaking off and moving to a different part? Now, of course, I'm not talking about what's floating in the water, because that wouldn't probably change the weight of that water, would it? I'm talking about what's on land in Greenland, in Iceland, and, at the South Pole in Antarctica.
Yeah, well, Greenland for sure, and Iceland for sure. Iceland absolutely is losing a lot of ice simply because of it's a hot place, and it's getting hotter because of the volcanism that's going on over there. It's very, very famous, well-studied area in terms of volcanism. Greenland's ice sheets also are going under perhaps a melting process, perhaps due to the same mechanism, but we don't know for sure. And Antarctica is getting thicker. The ice sheets there are getting thicker. So there'd be more weight being pushing down, yet on its peripheral, you see breakage. So this interesting mechanism. But overall, I guess it comes right back down to what I just was trying to explain, was that there might be some other greater mechanism that is functioning right now, extraplanetary. Something maybe like a planet X that we don't see know about, although I kind of been looking around and seeing different, perhaps discoveries from an X-ray point of view that are moving in from the south. But then, of course, there's the solar activity, too, which can cause different gyrations, which was at one time dismissed as not possible. But now there's much more higher inclination to believe that it's having an effect throughout the solar system. So anyway.
Let's get Nancy Leader back on.
Yeah.
I'm going to contact her if it's okay with you and see if she has a few minutes to spare. I'd like to come on for a future show and give us the update on what she's been spending her life and career researching.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
I did promise we'd read an email before we completely run out of time, and I'm sorry I didn't get to it till now, listeners, but here's one, and it comes from Tony C. His last name begins with a C, and it writes, Could you thank Michael and the Celestials for their great advice on using this life as a shortcut to greater progress through the seven psychic circles towards the spark of divinity inside? Over the last couple of years, I've made some progress and can cope a bit better with life's ups and downs as a result. So that in itself is a huge benefit. But when it comes to the really tricky tests, I almost always seem to slip up after working hard not to do so. I'm usually annoyed with myself afterwards. I don't suppose I could get some advice to strengthen my resolve to avoid these slip-ups, or maybe Michael could put a word in with the Celestials for a bit of assistance or guidance. Your comments.
Well, that's exactly what you're supposed to be doing, is looking for that assistance and guidance, because you're not in it alone. It's really, what was a tremendous educational process with a divinity concept, or the divinity within. God is inside of you, and yet you're far away from it. This is a concept that I didn't understand. And the psychic circles were drawn, and the progress toward that is different for every person, because it is a very personal, very unique to the individual experience, yet you can generalize it as going through these seven developmental periods of discovery and growth. And at each point, there will be a challenge, a tremendous challenge. And there is almost like a barrier that needs to be broken through, and sometimes it's extremely painful. Discoveries of having to allow certain areas, certain they can be emotional things, they can be ideas of ideological things that can be barriers that can be dropped, that can be hindrances to moving in the direction in which having a greater peace. But that word I just used, is that peace is truly the guide, not necessarily joy or happiness or greater peace, because sometimes you have to drop some things down, as allow them to fall. I got through discussing the concept of how I could interface into the craft. It's far more than a craft, but another living being, and interfacing with it in a much higher sense than what Spock would have done on a mind meld. It's not so foreign, perhaps, in terms of our way of looking at it. In the approach toward divinity, it is an approach that requires greater and greater levels of purity of consciousness. And don't worry about the base human drives that get in between it. And we got them. We got, you know, basic hunger drives. You got drives for just living life. You got a sexual drive mechanism. These things are unimportant, and they really, if you only focus on them, they perhaps could become hindrances. But they're at a certain level, you pass that, and they're in back of you already. You penetrated that. Once you pass that point, they're just in back of you. They're no longer part of the hindrance process. They're just recognized as perhaps a process linked more biologically, because you're on another approach already, a deeper approach, and one that would be personal to you and the divinity within. And that that things that people would point out, you know, as being meaning that you haven't reached, was defined perhaps by others who philosophically drew some kind of picture, whether there be some religion of the world, great religion of the world, or some philosophy, would probably be an erroneous measure. The greatest measure would be the peace in your approach to divinity. As you approach divinity, divinity will become much more peaceable in terms of an approach than something that you strive for. It's something you become and add to yourself. It's almost like melding with, and that is the ultimate goal, to become a new being,
Well, listeners, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time, although we did get a suggestion in from Pakal, Michael, that maybe we might be interested in having on someone named Dr. William Gaspar, who has a new book out called The World Tree. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. I am not. Are you? Dr. William Gaspar and the book The World Tree. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, I think I did a little bit, but...
We'll take that into consideration, Pakal. Thank you for the tip. We just have a few seconds left before the CBS News comes on, and I want to make sure every program I do this. I want to thank Michael for his valuable time. He has to take off work to come do this. Why does Michael do this? He has nothing to sell. He does not get paid. Artists First will not accept advertising on this program. We pay for this out of our pockets. Michael does this because he told his celestial friends that he would. This is a new thing in this world, someone that actually keeps their word and says they're going to do something and then actually does it. We could all learn from that as well. And I just want the listeners to know that there's no hidden agenda here. We put this information out to let you, the listener, decide if we're a bunch of idiots or perhaps this is some information that is extremely valuable to you and your further existence. Michael, thank you again for all of your time. All of our listeners very much appreciate you appearing with us every week and taking out time from your valuable schedule to spend it with us.
Very appreciative of the opportunity, and thank you so much to allow this to go out and go forth. And the celestials themselves are very grateful and are offering a great amount of very interesting kinds of blessings moving forward.
Well, thank you, everybody. CBS News comes your way in about 40 seconds. After that, it's the Artie Kornfeld Spirit Show, followed by Comedy After Dark. Michael, stay well. We'll see you next week.
Okay, aloha.